And that's it for today's edition of Saturday Noon Tunes. Remember, we play Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
And good morning, everybody. This is Education Matters. I'm Bob Haggerty. And today I would tell you, of all the shows that I've done, this is definitely going to be one of my favorites. It's going to be one of my favorite topics. If you know my children, I'm sure right now they're putting in their earplugs because I've heard it a million times about the game of golf, how it changes people, how it changes education. And finally, people are coming out and talking about the positives when it comes to that. We have a huge announcement about Kenosha as well and about the type of golf, a certain type of golf that we're going to be talking about today as well. So again, Education Matters on WGTD. Guests today, Bill Ernst and Greg Thompson, and you're going to figure out why they're here in just a second, but I know that they're avid golfers. I've had the good blessing to play golf with both of you and touch a minute about golf and your life. Start with you, Greg.
Well, thanks, Bob. Appreciate you having us here today. Golf is interesting because it's a game, obviously, one that we probably consider to be the greatest game ever invented. It's one of the few games in which you keep score for yourself. You call penalties on yourself.
Right.
It's a game of integrity and honor, and it probably has more parallels to life than any other game you can imagine. There are ups and downs, struggles and triumphs. There's times that you're completely frustrated, and other times that you're joyous, and there's nothing else you'd rather be doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I go back to the integrity part, and I don't know another game that you do. You call the foul on yourself, and that is a very special a special thing with the integrity, with the honesty. I don't hire anybody until I play golf with them. They don't have to be good. They at all do not have to be good. They can look and say, I've never played. And I say, that's just fine. It's okay. At the end, did they count their strokes? Did they move the ball? Did they find, I'm using air quotations here, find the ball in the deep rough type of deal, all relating to that honesty. Because if they're going to cheat on the golf course, I'm in the financial arena. What are they going to do when they're dealing with somebody else's money? So that's and I laugh because I have five kids. Not all of them count their strokes. We used to go. My kids got their clubs when they turned five. We would go out, and one of the kids would get done with a hole and say, "Yeah, I got a four, I got a five," and the rest of the kids would give them the look. And another one of my kids would look and say, "Yeah, like 25 this hole, does it? You know?" And go from there. So yes, Bill, your thoughts.
Well, for me, golf has always been something I took up from a social standpoint, to meet people and spend time with them in a competitive but not yet overly competitive, you know, football, basketball type strategy, you know,
confrontation. How old were you when you started?
I didn't start playing golf till I was in my mid-30s. And I took it up basically because I'd given up other sports. But being in the business world, it was a great way to, as you talk about, you know, the honor of the game and respect that you have to meet people and understand what they were all about. And as we get into the conversation today and start talking a little bit about, you know, the wooden clubs.
Right.
The wooden clubs or the hickory clubs in our group, it's golf, and we all love golf, but it's the people that you meet that play these clubs that really add so much interest and intrigue, in my opinion.
So if you are interested, there is a terrific organization. It's called First Tee. First Tee is nationwide, and look it up. Look it up on the internet. Find out the closest First Tee organization that is here. I know that they have them in Milwaukee, because I've gone up and have met with some of the individuals that have taken part. They have a number of kids that historically wouldn't play golf that have had the opportunity now to play, and they are terrific athletes and terrific golfers. And they will tell you they've learned to be better people because of the game, you know, overall. So I'm gonna hit Kenosha and Kenosha County. When I learned to play, and I know, see, I'm not that old. I'm 57. I could play for a quarter. I could play, and I did play, 36 holes a day, if it wasn't lightning out, at Muni for a quarter each 9 holes until noon. So I bought my last 9 at right around 11:30, and then a hot dog and a soda and a bag of chips was $1. So for $2 a day, I learned to be able to play golf. And there were a number of people that were there. I used to go with friends, but I also went by myself to play and learn the game. My grandfather challenged in the county open. For those of you old enough to remember Fritz Seibel, that was my grandfather. He's the one that got me my clubs when I turned 4. I played for Kenosha Tremper. Those are big deal, big parts of my game. And now we'll bring up why these gentlemen are here. When I learned to play, I used something called a persimmon wood. It was really wood. The head of the club was wood. And because of that technology, there was a limit to how far you could actually hit the ball. Yes, your bigger, stronger guys would hit it further. But we have come so far in, what, the last 20 years, 25 years, in technology, it has truly changed the game. I don't know if it's for the worse, but it has changed the game. And there are parts of us that have really enjoyed the older, the way it was played before the technology. And that's why these two gentlemen are here. And there is a group called the Hickory, help me out.
Society of Hickory Golfers.
And not only do they use the, I should say we, because I went out and bought a set of clubs because of these gentlemen. Not only do they use the technology from the 1920s, but they use the shafts, which means the shafts are wooden. So I don't know who wants to talk about this, because it gave me some of the greatest joy in golf that I have had in years. This is the second year I had the opportunity to play with you. Talk to me about it. Talk to me about where did it start, the Hickory society. This is nationwide. Is it international or nationwide?
International.
And how long has it been going on?
The society started in 2007, and it was basically started by a group of collectors that had been collecting antique clubs. And during their trading sessions, they would get together and just grab some clubs and go out on the course and play. And the idea came up that, geez, wouldn't it be nice if we actually played a tournament with these clubs? And that's basically where the whole concept started of the Society of Hickory Golfers. So the society focuses on a period of from 1900 to 1935, which many refer to as the golden era of golf, the Bobby Jones era.
Bobby Jones.
Yep, he would be the most famous, although there's many others. And as steel came in the mid-20s to late-20s and into the 30s, then the hickory went away, and so did that style of play. But the wooden-shafted clubs obviously go back well before 1900. There's a whole other group of the Society of Hickory Golfers that play what's called gutty golf, which is the smooth-faced clubs with the wooden shaft but with a gutta-percha ball, which is basically tree sap. And then you want to go a little bit further back, you know, down the rabbit hole, if you will, there's a group that plays featheries.
Right. That's the feather golf. The golf ball that I always think it's more like a baseball, but it is there's feathers inside.
Correct. Top hat full of feathers, boiled, sewn into, if you can imagine a golf ball being stitched on three out of four sides. Each feather stuffed in, and then finishing the stitch to enclose the golf ball and letting it sit for up to 6 months so those feathers dry and they expand. And that's what made the ball hard.
So what got me into it, and you guys may remember, is there was last year, we were invited to partake in 18 holes at Kenosha Country Club. And what I had just received for Christmas the year before was a wood-shafted club from my kids. That is what they all went together. They found a club, and they bought it for Dad. And they're like, oh, it's not expensive, Dad. It's not a big – oh, and I just love it. It's in my office. And I decided to bring it down. So I came out, and there were a group of guys, and they saw me walking with it. And they're like, oh, let us tell you about the club. So they were able to look at who made the club. They were able to be able to tell the design. And then they said, yeah, this is a rare putter. I'm thinking it's a one iron. It's a rare putter. And I said, well, how rare is it? And one of the guys looked and said, about $300 rare for the club. And I'm like, really? Well, I'm an economist, so the first thing I'm going, should you sell it? And and I'm like, oh, well, no. I could never do that with something from the kids. But, wow, it hit me that these clubs are around. People like me, we don't know a lot about them. And then we went out to play golf. And the first thing that I really became enamored with is, you don't look and say, hand me a 3-iron, or I'm going to get my 3-iron. What do you say instead?
I think this shot calls for a brassy.
They have names.
Or maybe it's a mashie.
Right.
Or you're close to the green, it's a niblick, or if it's a chip shot, maybe your jigger.
And maybe you're going to pull out your bulldog if it's a long shot.
There you go.
Which is my favorite club in the bag. That would be the precursor to it, for those of you that would play, to a fairway wood.
That's right.
So, you start to look and look into playing, and all of a sudden, if you're a history buff, all of it becomes so alive for you in how you go and you start to learn. Now, I am completely new to this idea. Both of you gentlemen work on clubs as well. Greg, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, thanks to Ernie, who really took me under his wing. He got me involved in hickory golf, really, at the beginning a few years ago. And I think the first time I went up to his house, he's turned his garage into a hickory workshop, basically. And he showed me, kind of the fundamentals of restoring clubs. And then, gave me the resources, where to get the materials, and how to get started with the art of restoring hickory clubs. So when my wife can't find me, she knows to go down the basement, and I've converted my ski tuning and waxing table into a hickory workshop table now.
So Ernie, what brought you? I mean, you've worked a lot. Doc, who isn't with us right now, he does a lot of them as well.
Correct.
And so, where did you learn? I mean, give them an idea, because so one of the clubs that I bought, you can hear a rattle. Mm-hmm. And you guys knew exactly what had to be done with that, as far as taking the shaft off, the head off the shaft, and all these things. Where did you learn? Try to give a visualization of what you do to these clubs to be able to bring them back to the to playing condition, because it's not unusual. It's the first time I saw it. It was this year. Is that there was a head that cracked or a shaft that cracked?
A shaft.
But that's not unusual.
Absolutely not. I mean, they're wood shafts. They're 100 years old or older. Some of them have dry rot. Some of them haven't been stored properly or taken care of. And so it's really not a hard process. There's two parts to this golf club. There's the iron head and there's a wooden shaft. And so to get a club prepared, and we find clubs all over. We find them antique stores. We find them at rummage sales. You find them at, you know, people give them to you. In fact, this afternoon I'm going to look at a collection of 500 clubs. You know, people.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a gentleman in Kenosha here that has over 18,000 of them. So, I mean, they're around. They made millions of these clubs. But so to take the club apart to get it ready for play, you have to remove the head, which is usually glued on. Could be a combination of horse glue and horse hair. The things you find when you take a club apart are amazing, what they use for adhesives, right? All sorts of things. But you have to knock the pin out, and a pin is very much like the thickness of a, 3/16 welding rod is what I use for replacing that. And the shaft is sharpened like a pencil, and it fits together into the head. We re-glue it and put the pin back in. Then you gently sand the shaft, stain it if you want to have a color to it, and put some oil on it to just treat the wood. And now you have to put a grip on it. So once you put the grip on it, it's really ready to play, and it's not that hard of a process. Now, identifying good clubs, playable clubs versus collectible clubs, there's two different schools of thought there. I mean, there's some clubs that are worth thousands of dollars.
Right.
You're not going to bring them out on the golf course and hit them. But there's a lot of players out there, a lot of clubs that were meant to be played. And, you know, in my situation, you had mentioned the club on your wall or in your office.
Right.
I had a friend of mine that got me into it. He happened to walk into my office, and I had a driver up on the wall. Been there for 10 years. He said, "You ever hit it?" I said, "No." He goes, "Let's take it out and hit it. It looks like it might be a good player." So we did. We went out and hit the club. That club sat in my bag for 10 years. I used it. You know, these clubs were meant to be played.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the movie. Will Smith. Do you know?
Bagger Vance.
The Legend of Bagger Vance.
There you go.
My favorite golf movie. And I know that there's many out there, but it dealt a little bit about that. 1920s,
mm-hmm.
taking place in Savannah, Georgia, or thereabout, right in that area, and with the clubs. And I guess we can talk about it now. And Greg, why don't you make the announcement, because you're on the board at Kenosha Country Club, and this is huge news, not only for Kenosha Country Club, but for Kenosha. I'll give it to you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. We're very excited and honored to be hosting the 2024 U.S. Hickory Open at Kenosha Country Club, September 8th to 10th next year. This tournament comes to the Midwest every 4 years, and we were very honored to be selected by the committee to host at Kenosha, which this will be our first national tournament in the history of the club. It's an amateur tournament,
right,
of all age groups, men, women. There's an open division for the best players, and there'll be players coming from all over the country and perhaps even some from outside the country.
And it's a big deal. This is the opportunity to really see the best at the way we think of to be the home of golf. And we're excited. As everybody knows, I am a member of Kenosha Country Club. And it was designed by one of the leaders during the 1920s, Donald Ross. And due to an incredible generosity of benefactor, Mrs. Uline, it has been brought back to the way that it was in the 1920s, and I think that that definitely helped bring this the Hickory back or to Kenosha Country Club.
Yeah, I think thanks to the generosity of Mr. and Mrs. Uline made this restoration possible, which we started in 2015, and we're now wrapping up this fall with the bunker project. And there'll be a few minor tweaks here and there, but this will be really the 99% completion level this fall with the course restoration. And I think the course appealed to the Society of Hickory Golfers. Ernie and many of the guys from the Wisconsin Hickory Golfers Group had played it and brought it to the attention of the society. And I think between the character of the golf course, great location, easy to get to, and maybe some other factors Ernie could comment on, I think we were fortunate to be selected.
Can you comment about the...
Sure. The Donald Ross design was a huge part of the decision. Obviously, having it in the similar state it was in when it was built in 1921, designed,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Made all the difference in the world. Imagine being Donald Ross. You're one of the top course designers in the world at that
right.
point. You get a call. You come to Kenosha, Wisconsin. Now, he had done much work in Chicago. There's only two courses in Wisconsin that are Donald Ross courses, and Kenosha is one of them, and that's something to be proud of. So you look at the piece of property, and you only know golf one way, right? Now, we're looking at golf 100 years later and saying how the technology, the ball, has changed the game, changed the courses, made many courses obsolete. This particular time, 1920s, when he's here, he only knew golf one way.
Right.
There were changes to the game being made. He's trying to anticipate what they are, but it was built for Hickory Golf, and that's what we play. We play Hickory Golf. So to find a course like this and find it returned to almost its original condition and design the way he intended it to be played, it's unique, and it's very special, and we're very happy to be here.
I will tell you, as a player, sometimes we don't like Donald Ross, especially when we're on a particular green. He designed courses that would challenge anyone at any particular level, correct?
He certainly did, and he really didn't make courses difficult by trickery or, you know, any gimmicks. It's all there in front of you. So really the only one to get sore at is yourself if you put yourself in a position where it's a difficult approach to the hole or you've put a ball off a green,
which we've
all done.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the one difference today in the golf course to what it was when it opened in 22, it was built in 21, as Ernie said, the greens are much faster now than they were back then. They didn't have the technology, the mowers, to mow them in the maintenance procedures to get them as quick as they are now. And so we have to adjust for that. And then, you know, obviously that's easy to do because we grew up playing on greens of this relative speed. But back then they were rolling at a 3, maybe a 4
right.
on a stimp
meter.
And now they're 10. So, you know, that's probably the biggest difference in the golf course. Other than that, nothing has changed in the layout. The greens have been restored to the original sizes. The bunkers are now being restored to the original shapes and with new drainage and sand, so they'll be consistent to play out of. The trees that were added over the years are, for the most part, off the playing field and more on the edges of the stage of the playing field. And so it resembles what it looked like quite a bit now, back in the early 20s.
Now, I expect in the tournament, and I know, Ernie, you're wearing right now some of the traditional clothing as well. I've gone out. I have three or four sets of the clothing. It is very different. I played, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago we played.
Right.
And I had a shirt and tie on. And you tuck your tie in. Talk a little bit about the clothing, Ernie. And, you know, I guess how and why they dressed the way they dressed at the time.
Well, I think the clothing just goes back to the period of the 1920s, and you're getting into the roaring 20s. And the dress that we wear is just basically to honor that part of the game. It's as much as the golf clubs. I always like the joke when you show up at these tournaments, some guys come to play golf, some come to dress up. But I'm telling you, when you see 100 players out there in period dress, men and women,
right,
particularly the women, they know how to dress. They look wonderful. There's some gentlemen out there that look like they just came off of an ad, you know, for chewing tobacco or something. But, I mean, they look good, right? And so the what many refer to as knickers, which isn't probably the correct term. The correct term is plus twos or plus fours. And that's related to how much fabric pulls out from along the side of the knee. So, for example, today you can't see, but I'm wearing plus twos. It looks like Greg's got plus twos on also. But if you see the real baggy pants.
And that's what I was wearing.
Those are plus fours. So you refer to knickers and you're over in Scotland playing hickory golf, they think you're talking about underwear.
Okay.
So just as a point of reference.
Very good. So it is next September, people coming out to view, to watch. Mm-hmm. The tournament probably would expect the majority of people dressing in that period dress.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. They would be wearing the plus twos, plus fours, vests, probably shirt and tie, not all of them. A lot of them wear jackets because obviously we didn't have rain gear back then. They had nice wool jackets, which do a wonderful job of keeping you warm and are really stretchable. You think of the restriction in a golf swing. I always questioned why they would wear it when it was raining because it gets rather heavy. But that's what they had.
Sure. And one of the differences would be, I'm assuming, no metal spikes.
That's true.
Because I grew up with, and I still miss, the metal cleat on the shoe. That was used, that was normal back then, but it really did mess up a green.
That's true. I have seen some people with vintage golf shoes, but not that many. You know, I think most of us are wearing modern shoes when we play.
Correct.
Well, I don't think we have a choice. I mean, do you know any course now that allows a metal spike?
I don't.
Yeah, neither do I because of the amount of damage. I did learn something, though, that Mickelson and Tiger Woods still wear metal when they play tournaments.
I've heard that.
And I guess when you're at that level, you get the benefit that, you know, at least me, I can speak for a hacker like me, they wouldn't allow that. How good are the people that will be playing next year? I mean, the open division.
There's some good players out there. I would expect at Kenosha that we'll see some subpar rounds, you know, 69s, without a doubt from some of those players. They hit the ball well. Major difference in hickory golf versus today's golf is off the tee.
Right.
So if you're a modern player and you hit a 300-yard drive with your modern, which is pretty good, you're probably going to hit it about 250 with the hickories.
Which totally changes the hole.
Absolutely. Yardage is important. You know, part of the modern game that's making a lot of these courses obsolete is length. And that can be a reflection mostly, I think, of the ball more than the technology. But once you get by the driver and you get into irons with the hickories, there's not a lot of difference other than you don't get the spin. Our grooves on these clubs left us in probably 1940. So there's a lot of clubs out there with markings on the face, but they're just not as defined as they would be with a new club.
Well, we were talking, and I was taught a total different game than they play now. I was taught pitch and run, which means you hit before the green and you let it run up. So the idea is to know what how the green is shaped and be able to use where you're going to have it run up to have it try to be as close to the hole as possible.
Absolutely, and that's the style of play. We play quite a bit with the hickories today. There are some shots where you're close enough where you can fly the ball onto the green surface, but there are quite a few where you're running the ball up, as you say, and that's really how golf was played when it started, whether it was in Scotland or Ireland or over here in the early 1900s. When
you go over there and they will argue which point it is, right, of who started golf.
Yeah. But if you look at Kenosha Country Club, look at the run-ups allowed on those greens.
That's right.
That's the way golf was played back then, and that's part of the genius of Donald Ross. There's ways to run up on a green that gets you very close to a hole, and there's other approaches that aren't going to get you home. So
that's right.
So when we look at the process, before we go forward, you find a club, and let's say you're going to hit it. We have to tell everybody, watch what type of golf ball you use, because today's modern golf ball may be too hard and you can damage the club. Who wants to tell them? Because I've been told, and I went out and bought these balls. What are they called?
Well, they're just a soft compression ball.
So you know, super soft.
Callaway has a super soft. Wilson Duo is a 28 compression ball. Whereas if you look at today's balls, like a Pro V1 is like an 85 compression. I think a Pro V1X might be 90, 95. But those balls are just too hard to hit with the wooden shafts. You can hit them, but I'm going to tell you, most of us don't swing hard enough to actually get the benefit of the golf ball, number one. But eventually you're going to create enough vibration in that club head that comes up the shaft, you're going to crack a shaft.
So if you're going to try this, if you're going to spend the money on the club, spend the money and get the super soft balls so you don't cause the damage of something that you put money in and that you invested.
They're cheaper too.
That I didn't realize. I didn't think about that. I'm all for that. And it allows you then to buy some of the clothes, right?
You could do that if you wish.
So how do they find out about the organization?
It's the Society of Hickory Golfers. So if you go on, it's hickorygolfers.com. Would be the website that you'd go to. Our Wisconsin group is the Wisconsin Hickory Golfers, and we have a very active Facebook page. In fact, tomorrow, which is Saturday, after we get done playing an event at Kenosha today, we're playing at Spring Valley, which is a Langford Morneau course, a very, very nice track for hickories. But Society of Hickory Golfers or Wisconsin Hickory Golfers.
Your favorite course in the state of Wisconsin?
I have to go with Lasonia only because we have our Wisconsin Hickory Open there. It is probably the best hickory golf course in the state of Wisconsin.
And makes it? Well, go ahead.
It's another Langford and Moreau design, like Spring Valley, but it's probably one of the best Langford and Moreau designs in the country, wouldn't you say?
I would, and it hasn't been touched. It was owned by the church organization, the Baptists. They never put money into it, so trees weren't planted, things weren't changed. It just is what it was back in the 1930s when it opened.
And a lot of people would have said, oh, geez, they didn't put money into it. And now those that did are paying money to have it put back to the way that it originally was intended before.
Yep. There's a number. We're blessed in Wisconsin with the number of golf courses we have to play, and the quality is unmatched around the country. I mean, there are some great golf courses. I mean, I love the Irish course at Kohler. I think that's another great hickory course. And that's how I judge courses. So,
I'll have to say that the sheep roaming around the course does lend some authenticity. If you're going to go over into the UK to be able to play. if a person wants to get involved, how do they know what to buy, what not to buy? Where do they go? Because it, from my standpoint, I've asked a lot of questions, and I was still on a wing on a prayer out there. How do you go about it?
Find someone that's done it is my number one recommendation. There's lots of things for sale on the internet. I'm not going to say it's all bad equipment, but a lot of it is. Get to know somebody that's played Hickory Golf. And again, we host 9 to 12 events every summer in Wisconsin around the state. You're welcome to come play with us. We'll give you a set of clubs to try just to get you involved in it and see if it's for you. It's not for everybody, but for those that enjoy antiquing, enjoy woodworking, and love golf, and want to meet some really unusual, fun people, this is something you should look into.
And they're nice. Every one of the guys that I've met, they were just nice people, very open, and excited to be able to share the historical aspect of the game.
True, Bob. I mean, we've all been down that path. We've been down that journey. We'd like to share our experiences to get you to a point where you feel comfortable to start doing it yourself. You talked about the back of the golf clubs or the history of the clubs. If you flip over any iron and look at the back of that club, it's got markings on it and tells a story. You can usually take a club right back to the original maker and probably within a two-year period of when that club was made.
It's fascinating. I've got Greg looking and shaking his head, but the stories, Greg, are just absolutely, they're fantastic once you start to learn about why and how these clubs came to be.
You really do get pulled into it. If you enjoy history and you're into golf, it's really easy to get sucked into this rabbit hole of Hickory Golf, and then the more you read and learn about it, the more you want to find out about it. And I've filled up a bookshelf now with books I've found, you know, in Scotland or, you know, online or whatever, old books. One of my favorite authors is Bernard Darwin, who was probably the greatest writer about golf, you know, over 100 years ago. Alistair McKenzie, the great architect, who was actually a doctor and, it was in the Boer Wars that where he observed camouflage being employed, and he used that in his golf course architecture. His writings are just incredible. So there's a lot of different ways you can go once you get into it, but it's all very interesting, and also it goes back to the integrity of the game that you talked about before.
Right.
You know, these good people you mentioned that are involved in this game, You're almost assured that they're all going to be really good, honest, fun people. It's a group that I heartily recommended to Kenosha Country Club when I brought the idea of hosting the Open. I said, look, you're not going to have anybody driving a cart over a green or
right
down a hill like we do at some of these outings that we allow at the club. You know, when people drink too much or they're, you know, just don't have respect for the property.
Or they don't, you know, one of the things that I've always seen, and this, I didn't have the good fortune to grow up at a country club. I learned at Muni, Washington Park Golf Course, to those
right
of you that didn't grow up in Kenosha. But I still, my grandfather, who taught me to play, if I didn't fix a ball mark, I wouldn't be playing the next time.
There you go.
Or I would never have thought about wrapping a club around a tree. I mean, I've seen that, but it would have been, I would never have been given the opportunity to buy another club, let me tell you. And I've seen whole sets of clubs thrown in the water and clubs wrapped around trees and snapped off at the hosel mm-hmm when they hit the ground. I don't see that.
No. Well, it's a privilege to be able to play golf,
right?
And especially if you can get to play, you know, at a course like Kenosha, you want to leave it the way you found it. You replace your divots, you rake the sand traps, you fix the ball marks, and you know, you appreciate being in a beautiful place for, you know, whatever it is, 3 or 4 hours with really good people, and enjoy that camaraderie. it's really hard to beat.
I'm going to stop you. I've got about 2 minutes. They're talking about shortening golf courses, the number of holes. They're saying that golf is too long, and that's why there seems to be fewer people playing golf.
I think it's great to have options to play less than 18 holes.
You can play nine, right?
You can play nine. You can play three or five or whatever you want. And shorter courses have been getting more and more common around the country, and they're a lot of fun. Some of the old courses in Scotland were 12 holes. I just played one back in May, Shiskin. And, you know, bringing that to America is a great idea, whether it's a 9-hole course or a 12-hole course or, you know, a short course. Now Kohler has one called the Baths, is it? Mm-hmm. Is that like 10 holes?
13.
13 holes, okay.
Tell me, because I'm not familiar with this one. And I thought I played all the Kohler courses. When did this become available?
Well, I think it started out in Bandon Dunes. Bandon Dunes had a 13-hole par 3 course, and it's just meant to be a fun little practice. I'll tell you, the Kohler course, the Baths, is the best practice facility in the state of Wisconsin if you're going to Scotland to play golf. They've done a wonderful job on that. Now that I think of it, the Baths is 10 holes. Okay. Sand Valley has their 17. Sandbox is 17 holes.
Yep.
So it's just, and a lot of guys will go out there with three or four clubs. That's just it. You know, it's just a fun walk to have a good time and swing a golf club.
And good exercise and getting the opportunity to get some fresh air in today's world is always a good thing.
It's a great sanctuary to get away from the chaos of modern day life.
Stay tuned as we get ready. As we go into next summer, you're going to be hearing more and more about the Hickory Open coming to Kenosha. I promise I will keep everybody informed. I'm going to give the last word to you guys.
We'll welcome, obviously, when the time comes, you can let people know, but we'll welcome people to come out to spectate. We need volunteers. If anybody's interested in helping out,
being a marshal and such.
Being a marshal or a greeter, or, you know, there'll be a variety of different things that you could do to participate.
I've been a marshal. I marshaled at the PGA up at Kohler. I marshaled at Geneva National for one of the ladies' tournaments that occurred. If you have the time, you should do it. It is a terrific opportunity to be able to see some terrific golf and to have a really good day on the course. So
absolutely. And for any local companies, we're looking for sponsors. It'd be a great opportunity for you to get involved and get some publicity for your company.
There you go. Bill, you've got the last word.
All right. Well, I just want to say thank you to Greg in particular. Greg brought Kenosha Country Club to my attention, and really without his driving efforts, I don't know that we would have put the time and energy in to examine Kenosha the way we did. I want to thank the course and the staff there, and all the members for allowing us to come out and host the event there. It is going to be special, and I hope people come out and just to see it.
Greg, give the greenskeeper a plug, because this
Absolutely.
Guy, they're amazing out there.
They really are. Harrison Beal, our greenskeeper, does a phenomenal job. Paul Bastron, greenskeeper emeritus, still helps out a bit, even though he's retired. And Paul really spearheaded the restoration of the course, starting back in 2014 when we hired Drew Rogers, our architect. So Paul, Harrison, Derek, and their whole all the staff of guys that work hard almost every day of the week, early in the morning, do a phenomenal job.
This has been Education Matters. WGTD, I know it's not traditional today, but there's so much to learn, and there's so much to be able to be exposed to. Take the opportunity, come down, expose your kids, no matter what their age. My kids got clubs at 5. They started hitting clubs at 3. It's life-changing. It does give them opportunities that they would not have otherwise. Education Matters here on WGTD. I'm Bob Hegarty. Have a great morning, everybody.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, a thorough and exciting preview of